Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Do the right thing on the offensive end. For years now, we take it for granted. This is not how most superstars play at all. You think about it, they're looking to get theirs. They're looking to prove a point. They want to prove dominance. Steph Curry, he was fine. He was legitimately fine when he didn't score in the first half of Game 6. He thought that he was making the right plays. And, yes, he thought that, you know, he could have made a couple more shots that were when they were open. But, man, he was just trying to get the Warriors in the right position. And he got them in the right position for sure.
You're here.
After that game. But and Lord knows it hasn't stopped since. It's all about team basketball, though. Team basketball is what's gotten the Warriors this far. It's turned them into a dynasty. And as much as everyone wants to say, oh, well, he's scrawny, he's nothing, I can beat him one-on-one. Maybe that's why Paul Pierce doesn't have as many rings as he thought he should. Maybe that's why Charles Barkley doesn't have a ring, because they were too interested in their own individual stats, too interested in the individual game to really get the job done.
Beautiful, Dieter. Couldn't have said it better myself. Appreciate your time, brother. And, of course, we'll be following you on Twitter, at @DKurtenbach, and following your coverage up there in Portland. Appreciate it. Have a great day, dude.
Anytime. Later.
All right, good stuff. Dieter Kurtenbach. And, yeah, I mean, we go through this so often with Steph. And, you know, outside of the Bay Area, who's that jabroni from FS1 that was hating? I'm sorry, one more time. Oh, I can't hear you, Wes. Jump on the air real quick. What were you saying?
Rob Parker.
Thank you, Rob Parker. Thank you. Yeah, freaking calling Steph a mirage, whatever it was. I mean, come on, man. And, like, at some point, can you just appreciate the greatness of this man and what he does to make this team elite? And there's, you know, there's a willingness to defer to each other on this team. And let's face it, when they're all healthy, and, you know, Dieter talked about when DeMarcus is in there and Kevin Durant, you know, different guys have to be willing to acquiesce and maybe, you know, give up some of their offensive production to get other guys going. And, you know, if Kevin Durant's on that night, I mean, why wouldn't you just continue to feed him, seeing as how, you know, he's the best player in the NBA right now? You know, on a night where Clay's going shooting the rock, of course they're going to feed Clay. I mean, that's the willingness to defer on this team is what makes them special. And it's not like, oh, he's afraid to do it. I mean, we had a great text the other night. You know, when people want to lament how the Warriors, you know, after they lost in the NBA Finals to the Cleveland Cavaliers, oh, they felt like they had to add Kevin Durant. What team wouldn't want to add another great player, right? I mean, it's almost sounds stupid to even question that logic. Like, oh, let's see, we've got a damn good team. We've already won a title. We won 73 games. Oh, wait, and we can add the best player in the NBA, or I guess at the time, one of the top three players in the NBA. Like, who wouldn't want to do that? I just, it blows my mind. And I guess it's, you know, because we're here in the Bay Area, and not only do we understand, like, what he means to this team on the floor, but, you know, what he's meant to the community, like, what a good dude he's been, the way he's represented himself. And, you know, it's just, it's hard to find any faults in Steph Curry's life on the floor or off it. And, you know, he's, hey, I admire the guy. I do. And, I'm not one of those guys that goes over the moon about athletes in general. I mean, for the most part, they're just people, right? And just because a dude happens to be great at a, you know, at basketball, that doesn't make him, you know, a role model for me, or, you know, I don't look to them for guidance outside of, hey, just entertain me, right? But, you know, there are certain guys that kind of cross that threshold, and they're special and they're iconic. And that's Steph Curry to me. And I just love the fact that with Kevin Durant being out, it's allowed Draymond and Steph to remind us once again just how great that they can be, you know, as a tandem, as individuals. I mean, his production in this series has been off the charts. And I mean, look, 36 last night, 37 the game before, 36 before that, second half against Houston, 33 points. I mean, it's so funny, like, last night, Steph was incredible. He's been incredible in this series. And the reality is, he probably hasn't even been the best player on the floor, because Draymond has. But They will allow each other. They just, you know, it's the whatever, the rising tide lifting all ships. They just make each other great. And that's part of what's so special about this run that they've been on. And make no mistake about it. It starts with Steve Kerr and the way that he carries himself on a daily basis and the way that he empowers his players and the way that he doesn't get too high or too low. We had a great conversation Friday night about Steve Kerr's impact on all this and how I think it's easy to just look at Kerr and say, oh, well, I mean, you give me this collection of talent and I'll win some NBA titles too. How many titles did Mark Jackson win? None. Zero. And when Kerr got here, he changed this organization overnight. He turned them from a team going out in the first round to an NBA champion in year one. No more of that ISO ball crap. It was ball movement, switch heavy defensively. That was all Steve Kerr. And I think that's easy to forget. And I guess it's, you know, some jealousy from the national media. You know, I think some of the East Coast bias comes into this as well. And I mean, let's face it. It's hard to blame guys on the East Coast, you know, when the game tips off at like 10 o'clock in New York. It's understandable why they don't watch a lot of Steph Curry in Golden State Warriors basketball. And there's the jealousy factor as well. But on some level, can't you just appreciate what the guy does? And yeah, I mean, Dieter's point's well taken. Like, oh my God, Charles Barkley could beat Steph Curry one-on-one. You think when Charles Barkley's head hits the pillow at night and he thinks about Steph Curry's career, he wouldn't trade places with him in a second? You know, I mean, come on. Championships. That's how greatness is measured. Period. And speaking of that, this Daryl Morey stuff is just hilarious. And we'll get into that a little bit later on. John Dickinson's going to join us. Coming up next, though, big day at the Tank, San Jose Sharks, Game 5, Western Conference Finals. And make no mistake about it, I think the winner of Game 5 is going to win this series. I really do. And how cool is it that the San Jose Sharks and the Golden State Warriors could both be playing for their respective championships? That would be a beautiful thing. So we're going to talk to Brett Hedekin coming up on the other side. Game 5 at the Tank today. So we're going to do a little Sharks talk. And then after that, we'll go very Warrior heavy the rest of the way. We got a little post-game sound. John Dickinson's going to join us from up in Portland. So we still got, 3 hours almost to kick back and enjoy ourselves on a Sunday. So if you're riding around, I got you covered. Sharks talk next. And then Warriors talk wall-to-wall till noon. We take it up to Herbs. There's a lot happening. So just settle on in. Get your coffee. Maybe a couple of strips of bacon, whatever, you know, maybe you're having a nice muffin, whatever you do on a Sunday morning. I got you covered. It's Ryan Covey with you. 95.7 The Game. Feels so good, doesn't it? San Jose Shark playoff hockey, nothing like it. When they hit the ice coming out of Shark Head, you know it's Game 5 today down at the Shark Tank. All right, and a man that knows plenty about playoff battles, doing a great job on the coverage as well. Ladies and gentlemen, Stanley Cup champion in his own right, Brett Hedekin, rolling into 95.7 The Game. Ryan Covey with you. Brett, top of the morning. Appreciate you coming on early, man. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I think I'm like everybody else. I'm excited, but yet a little bit nervous here. Pivotal Game 5 is it's a big one, and looking forward to it at noon today.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And, you know, in a seven-game series, tied 2-2, winner of Game 5 goes on to win the series fairly often. I think it's 80% of the time, something ridiculous. So clearly a pivotal game is now it's a best of three for all intents and purposes. Talk about Game 4, Brett. And, you know, I thought St. Louis came out desperate and angry, as, you know, the way Game 3 ended. You know, you can understand why they were, a little cantankerous. But I thought as the game went on, the Sharks took over, and I thought they were the better team the last two periods. Unfortunately, they couldn't get that equalizer. I know that momentum doesn't carry over game to game, but I feel like the Sharks stylistically really started to impose their will the last couple of periods in St. Louis.
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I think the Blues, you know, if you look back at the Game 3 controversy with the hand pass from Timo Meier into Nyquist, finding Erik Karlsson the back door for the game winner in overtime, You know, I think Craig Berube really did a good job from everything that you hear out of the St. Louis Blues locker room to really settle his team down after the game, kind of saying, hey, guys, we can't do anything about what just happened. We've got to bounce back. We've got to let it go. There's a lot of things that we did that we could have iced the game, and we didn't. So we kind of turned it back on themselves to not really look at that play. And I thought they responded quite nicely there in game four, the Blues did, and they got off to a really good start. Their fourth line started the game, and they scored 35 seconds in, and it was a kind of a broken play. And in a bit of a way, you look at the way the Sharks played it, kind of a lazy play overall. All five guys guilty of the goal against. It wasn't just one guy. And you know, you just can't take a shift off in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And when you really break it down in the game, it was really that 35-second first shift of the game that cost them. And you're right. I think from that point on, midway through that first period and beyond, the Sharks outchanced them, outplayed them, outshot them. I think it's 2-1 in shot attempts during the course of the game. They blocked a lot, and the Sharks missed a lot, missed the net 22 times. So you wind that all up, and what you end up with is a game that, you know, you get exactly what you want. You keep an opponent to less than two goals, where the Sharks have won every time this year when they've kept an opponent less than two goals.
Wow.
And they didn't get it done in that game four.
Yeah, and normally you'd expect the Sharks offense to put up more than a goal, and you give Binnington plenty of credit. You know, he played great, I thought. Hey, you know, you played on the blue line in your playing days, Brett. Erik Karlsson, you know, he's had a bit of a roller coaster season. You know, he had a hard time getting that first goal. The numbers were there early in the year, and, you know, I think there was a bit of a struggle to settle in. I talked to Jamie Baker about that, and then, you know, things started to turn, and then, boom, he gets hurt. And then he's got to work his way back in there. And, you know, the assists were there early in the playoffs still. I mean, you know, you just see the way he handles the puck. He's so adept, and he can just kind of quarterback everything. And, you know, the Sharks already have one of those guys in Brent Burns, so to have two of them, I mean, what a luxury for Peter DeBoer. But I feel like Karlsson has really found his confidence. I feel like the injury trouble is hopefully in the rear view. And, you know, for the most part, you know, just from a skating perspective and from a game management perspective, I think Karlsson has been a real standout for me in this series. From your trained eye, just, you know, what have you seen from his progression and just where his game's at right now?
Well, Ryan, I hate to break this to you, but I'm actually, you know, I don't know anything right now as far as if he's going to play tonight, but he ended that game where he missed a lot of time in the third period.
Yeah.
He wasn't moving very good towards the end of that game. I'm not sure if he's re-injured himself. That's what my untrained, undoctored eye, if you will, but a guy that's played a long time can see a guy when he's banged up.
Yeah.
And when he's not moving very well. I think I don't know if he'll be playing today. I really don't. I mean, I'm hoping that he's good enough to play. But when you look at a 12 o'clock game, which the last time the Sharks I think played a game before 1 o'clock local time was in 2017, a long time ago. They're not used to playing the early game, so less time for him to recover to get ready for this 12 o'clock game. But I agree with you in the fact that Erik Karlsson was getting healthy on the fly, which. For guys that know that have had a growing pull and a strain to try to get healthy along the way is nearly impossible. Somehow this guy, because of the skill level and his ability to make plays under pressure, he's able to do it. And it's unfortunate if he was re-injured in that game four, but we'll have to wait and see on what he does here for today for our 12 o'clock game.
Yeah, what's up with the noon start, Hedy?
I have no idea. I think obviously you know, you got the golf on, you've got other things happening, and you'd roll some basketball in there too. I don't know. It's a tough situation for both these teams. Neither one of them are used to it. I think even the Blues haven't played in a game. Nashville at 11:30 was back February 10th, and that was the most recent one they've played. So neither of these teams have played in a game, but they both won that game. The Blues won 5-4 in overtime against the Predators at Nashville. And then the Sharks back in February 12, 2017, against at New Jersey at 12:30 game. They won 4-1. So who knows what's going to happen in this afternoon tilt.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I feel like, you know, you get this far and, you know, the rigors of playoff hockey have demanded so much from these guys. And to put them in this situation, it feels like an injustice to me. It really does. Hey, I want to ask you about Evander Kane. And, you know, clearly he sets his tone with the physical play, but this guy – Gave him a big contract, Hedy, and they need goals from Evander Kane. Just 2 goals in 18 playoff games. I know him and Thornton were having a little fun on the bench the other day, and I know Jumbo's just trying to empower him, keep it a little light, but at the same time, hey, like, let's go, big fella. What's Evander Kane doing for you that's not getting him success on the score sheet?
Yeah, it's been really hard to watch. You know, I mean, no goals in 9 games for Evander. No goals, obviously, in the series. Only 1 assist in the series. And he really, you watch his game, you're right. He's a power forward. He needs to be a power forward. And I don't feel I've seen a power forward in this series at all. And a matter of fact, a lot of times during the course of the playoffs, I don't know if, you know, Coach DeBoer's got him trying to maybe a little bit more on a leash, making sure that, you know, he doesn't take a bad penalty, but he hasn't taken any penalties hardly. I mean, the guy's been squeaky clean. I'd rather have him playing on the edge and playing with a little bit of rigor. I mean, you use the word rigor. I want to see some rigor. I want to see a guy coming in with authority and leaning on some bodies and going to the net hard. But the main thing that I see him in his game is in the offensive zone, holding on to pucks, not being knocked off the puck, and then when you have to cycle it or give it to somebody else, make sure it gets to your teammate. Make sure you cycle it to a teammate that can, you know, get the puck back. I think that's where he's given the puck away. And when I think about Joe Thornton, you referenced that little playful, whatever they call it on the bench, you know, calling a guy out. That's probably what Thornton's seeing. Thornton's seeing me, a guy making $5 million, cycling the puck to nobody. And that's something that's got to change here tonight. It has to change if he wants to be an impact player, not only in this series, but, you know, be a $5 million guy that can really make a difference in a game. We need Evander Kane tonight. I mean, if there's any night that they need him to come to play, well, today, I should say, it needs to be today.
Hey, Logan Couture, here we go again. Just, another postseason for Logan, another stellar run, 14 goals in 18 games. I love the fact, too, that he's got the missing tooth right now. I mean, if ever a guy just looks like he's immersed in playoff hockey, that's Logan Couture right now. And, you know, the offensive numbers, they're gaudy. And I think it's, you know, it's time to acknowledge Logan Couture. I mean, he might not be on the level of like an Ovechkin or, you know, a Crosby, like the, you know, Connor McDavid, the elite of the game. But if he's not there, boy, he's got to be knocking on the door of that upper echelon.
Well, he is there. I mean, you look since 2010. How about this? Ovechkin scored 50 playoff goals. Guess how many Logan? And by the way, there's only one guy behind him, and it's Logan Couture at 48 goals. Crosby, Malkin, Patrick Kane from the Chicago Blackhawks. They're way down there. They're in the low 40s and even high 30s. So Logan Couture is absolutely incredible right now with his ability to score goals in the playoffs. And he is right up there with Alexander Ovechkin and what he's done and been able to do in Stanley Cup playoff hockey. So he is an absolute beast right now, scoring goals. Yeah, their line didn't get it done last game. I think he's always been able to bounce back. He puts a lot of pressure on himself to perform in the playoffs and in big games. And, well, today it doesn't get much bigger. So I hope Logan can bring his best, him and his line.
How healthy is Pavelski right now? I mean, we know he had the layoff after that gruesome injury in Game 7. I was at the tank, Hedy, for Game 7 against Colorado when he got announced in the starting lineup. I've heard that place get loud, but that was loud and emotional. And, you know, I think his return to the lineup, I think, got them over the line against Colorado. But, you know, eventually that adrenaline wears off, and I think he's been good in this series, but not that vintage Joe Pavelski that we're used to. Where would you put his health right now from your vantage point?
Well, just you're seeing what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a guy that doesn't look healthy to me, and unfortunately, this guy's a warrior. I mean, unfortunately, he's a warrior, and unfortunately, he's having to play with injury. Nobody knows what's happened with him, but I just know that when the playoffs is over, we're going to hear a lot more about what Joe Pavelski's been playing with. But, you know, that's another thing, you know, people don't talk much about is, you know, the San Jose Sharks found a way to beat the Colorado Avalanche, you know, without their captain, without Joe Pavelski, and he comes back in. You're right. An emotional game, comes in and gets the tip on the first goal in Game 7. Then he assists the second goal, and then he draws a penalty in that game. The guy was phenomenal. Complete warrior from what, you know, you're seeing Joe Pavelski. But I think for him, yeah, probably not 100%, and he's going to have to try to find a way to make it work. He hasn't had an even strength point in this series, so hopefully him, Tomáš Hertl, and Evander Kane, that line needs to have something happen tonight. It just, Tomáš Hertl had just the one goal so far in the series. He hasn't had an even point strength, a five-on-five point in the series either, and he's really a guy that can be dominant. So hopefully his line, the Hurdle, Pavelski, and Kane line, can make it happen here today.
Who's been better in the series, Jones or Binnington, in your estimation?
I think it's been a wash. Okay. I really do. I mean, you look at the goals scored, it's pretty even. Sharks have scored 14 in the series, and the Blues have scored 13. I mean, that's how close it's been. It really hasn't been a goaltending, one goaltender's outplayed the other. I think both these guys have played really solid. And the difference is really now the Sharks have only had 7 different goal scorers in this series, and the Blues have had 11. They've had more depth scoring, which is something that's really been the strength of the Sharks all season long. So
right. You
really can't point the finger at the goaltender. It's got to be the depth, and it's got to be really that second and third line, and even the fourth line here today for the Sharks.
Yeah, and, you know, with Jumbo on the third line, you know, and I know that Sorensen had the injury, so they made the switch and put Melker Carlson on that third line with Thornton. You know, you see DeBoer making any more adjustments on the back end like that, maybe shuffling the lines at all, or is it just these are kind of the group that's got him here and he's going to pretty much stick with them?
I don't know. I think maybe Mike Haley gets back in today. And again, I'm just guessing.
Sure.
I guessed about Carlson. I'm guessing because we haven't been down there all day this morning. But I think Michael Haley might, if I'm Pete DeBoer, I don't mind putting him back in there just as a little bit of a security blanket, if you will, if guys are going to start running around. He kind of keeps things honest. And I kind of like that in a playoff game. If you're not going to play a guy like, let's say, Marcus Sorensen that much here today, put Michael Haley in the lineup, making sure that, you know, you've got some stability back there. If anybody wants to get out of hand, guess what? Michael Haley's going to come knocking on your door.
Hey, let me ask you this. The Boston Bruins have already closed out the Carolina Hurricanes, your old squad. And, you know, I can't help but romanticize about the thought of Joe Thornton, you know, playing for a Stanley Cup against the team that drafted him. I know the Sharks can't afford to get caught up in any of that because they got to win 2 games against the St. Louis Blues. That's it. But just the thought of Joe Thornton playing against the Bruins and what, you know, it could potentially be his final year in the NHL. I mean, does it get any better than that?
It's storybook, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't even make that up. I mean, if somebody said at the beginning of the year, let's see the Sharks and Boston, maybe potentially Joe Thornton's last year, and Joe's gonna he's gonna win the cup in Boston. Let's just he's gonna raise the cup in Boston. I mean, think about that for a minute. I mean, but that's again a lot of work to be done.
Right.
They got to win 2 more games here in this series before they can even contemplate even thinking about that. But you know what? The Bruins are gonna have 10 days off.
Yeah.
Between their last game against the sweep in Carolina and then obviously the start of game 1, I think it benefits whoever gets through this series. That's a long time to be laid off. The adrenaline comes down. I mean, Tuukka Rask has been the best player in the playoffs, their goaltender. For him to be sitting on the sidelines now for 10 days, that's just the best news anybody could have for a team going against a red-hot Boston Bruins.
Oh, so you think the layoff isn't going to be advantageous for them? Because I know the other side of that is the rest and the recovery through the through all the twists and turns of an NHL season and 3 rounds of the playoffs. But you think that 10 days, that's probably a little too much?
No, Columbus swept their first round series, came back, lost in round 2. The Carolina Hurricanes swept against the Islanders. They lost that last series. So
yeah.
I don't think it really benefits you. That layoff, you really come down. And, yeah, you get the rest, but, you know, you get a team like the Sharks coming off maybe a potential, you know, game 7 if they go 7, but even a 6-game series, they're going to be battle-tested and, you know, feeling good about themselves and the legs will be moving. So I think it'll benefit them. And if anything, it's going to hurt a guy like, I think, Tuukka Rask, who's been feeling so well. Yeah. And everything that puck right now looks like a beach ball, I think, to him.
All right, most important player for the Sharks today is?
Oh, man, I can't give one guy. I just think when the Sharks play as a group, when they have their whole lineup, no passengers, they could beat this team. They can beat the Blues. So for me, it's like one, all of them in together, one team, one group, one guy isn't going to make a difference. They got to have everybody going.
All right, good stuff. Hey, Eddie, I appreciate your time, man. And what's it like being the second best skater in your household?
I'm actually the third. My daughter had a figure skater. She's a figure skater as well, my youngest. And she won her competition yesterday. So,
then
I'm way down there.
Oh, I love it. Hey, good stuff, yeah. Brett. Well, I love your work, and you've been doing a great job with Ruzy and Bakes on the calls and everything. And we appreciate your time, man. Thanks so much for giving us a few minutes before the game.
No, thanks, Ryan. Thanks for having me on. Let's go, Sharks.
All right, let's go, baby. All right, good stuff from Brett Hedekin. For those that don't know, he's married to Christy Yamaguchi, the you know, gold medal Olympics figure skater. So just always love giving him a bad time about that because, I mean, here's a guy, you know, got a Stanley Cup on the shelf at the house, too. He won a cup with the Canes in 06. And, you know, there's just nothing like it, man. I mean, look, the NBA is dope. I mean, what the Golden State Warriors are doing, it's special. It's to be celebrated. We are witnessing basketball history. San Jose Sharks, like, just this fan base is just frothing at the prospect of getting a chance to play for that cup again. And they're making another deep run. And, you know, you look at Joe Pavelski. He's going to be a free agent after this season. Joe Thornton. I mean, the guy's going to be 40 soon. He's clearly coming to the end, right? Erik Karlsson, he's got free agency hanging over his head. We'll see what the Sharks are going to do there. The Sharks have been in the playoffs, I think, every year since 2003, except for once. They missed in, like, 2014, I think it was, 2015. 2014, 2015. They missed the playoffs that year. Other than that, they've been a playoff team every single year. But you know what? They've lost in the playoffs every single year. The last game of the Sharks season always ends with a loss and them getting eliminated from the playoffs. And, you know, this stuff, I know they've been in the conference finals five times in the last, 15 years? Because I mean, they made it the first time in 04. But this stuff, it's special, and their achievement should be celebrated. The fact that, you know, after going to the Stanley Cup finals a couple years ago, now 3 years removed, they're making another deep run. But you can, you know, and in a lot of ways, I can see the foundation for the future. You know, Timo Meier, Tomas Hertl. You figure if Joe Pavelski's tenure with the Sharks is done after this season, Logan Couture will probably take over as the captain. And, you know, you still got a pretty good core there. I think Marc-Edouard Vlasic's got a couple of really good years ahead of him. Justin Braun, clearly. Brent Burns is signed up long-term. Evander Kane's the guy I'm worried about, man. And this is the time. I mean, the Sharks gave him a huge extension. He's making a ton of cash. I mean, two goals in the playoffs, you just need more from him. These are the guys that need to lead in the postseason. And, you know, while Martin Jones didn't have his best regular season, I think, you know, what he went through in the Vegas series, getting pulled a couple of times, thankfully for him, Aaron Dell is not great. Because if the Sharks had, like the St. Louis, if Binnington struggles, Craig Ruby knows he's got Jake Allen that he can go to, who's been through plenty of playoff games in his NHL career. So thankfully for Jones, you know, the backup plan with Dell wasn't an attractive option. And so really, I think DeBoer, A, you know, he believes in the guy. I mean, he took him to a Stanley Cup finals before. And let's face it, when Jones is on, as my boy Wes on the other side of the glass say, he'd go God mode on you. But look, we need God mode Jones. And these chances don't come around very often. So if you're the San Jose Sharks, this is, you know, as important of a game as you'll find. And like I said, the winner of Game 5 in a 2-2 best of 7 goes on to win the series a ton. So I'll be shooting down there after the show today. Maybe I'll give them that extra push. And by the way, just a quick note, speaking of San Jose, shout out Chris Wondolowski, the Bay Area's own. 4 goals yesterday for the Earthquakes. Passes Landon Donovan for the most goals in MLS history. So just a little bit of Quakes for you today. Shout out Chris Wondolowski and what he did yesterday. He had been, you know, waiting on this moment for a while. You know, they'd made a switch to Coach Matias Almeida, and Quakes been playing some much better soccer lately. But he got in the starting lineup yesterday. It was a home game, a little rainy day down at Avaya, Chicago in town, and all Wando did was score 4 freaking times. So that's breaking the record because he needed 1 to tie and 2 to break, and he put the cherry on top. He made up for a little lost time yesterday, and I've had the chance to interview Wando before. He's a great dude. He's from Danville. You know, he's played for the men's national team. He's represented the Bay Area so well over the years, and you know what was really cool? The message from Landon Donovan, the guy that he passed up, but also Warriors tweeted something out. Sharks tweeted something out. The A's tweeted something out. I mean, the whole Bay Area, hashtag Bay Area Unite. I mean, that's what it's all about, man, because I know, you know, you got your A's fans, your Giants fans, your Raiders fans, your Niners fans, and I think everybody, you know, the Warriors kind of bring everybody together. But, you know, I think for a lot of people, the Sharks and the Earthquakes are maybe a little further down their pecking order of teams that they follow and love. But, you know, first of all, the South Bay, don't tell anybody in San Jose that, because, look, the Sharks, the Earthquakes, those are their squads, man. And I love it when, you know, sports brings people together. I mean, that's my favorite part of sports. Like, that's my favorite aspect is, I mean, you look around in a crowd, right? You go to a sporting event, everybody's represented for. And sports doesn't care about, you know, who you are and, you know, race, religion, sexual orientation. They don't care how much money you made. They don't care, you know, how sweet your hybrid is. You know, they don't care about any of that. They don't care about your 401k plan. They just care about you coming down there, bringing the noise, and bringing everybody together. And that's, to me, it's why I love the Bay Area, because, you know, we're this awesome, eclectic melting pot. But sports embody that in so many different ways. And, you know, right now, I just, you know, the Bay Area, let's face it, man, we're on fire. Could probably use a few more wins from the Giants, but, you know, we'll see how that works out, right? Boy. Oh, man. At least they're not, like, teetering around 500 or something and maybe threatening to make a run, because then Farhan couldn't really justify stripping this thing down. And, you know, with them slipping out of contention, their run differential's awful. I feel like Farhan, come trade deadline, is going to get busy. And I know it's going to suck in the short term, Giants fans. They're going to be bad. But guess what? They're bad already. So I don't care really at this point if they suck. I just kind of want to watch different guys suck. And I want to have something to hang my hat on, something to believe in for the San Francisco Giants. And it's going to take time. I know. You have to be patient with Farhan. This is a bad baseball team right now. And let's face it, he inherited an absolute mess. It's like buying a fixer-upper, you know? You got the vision. You know, you want to redo the bathroom. You want to get them hardwood floors in there. You know, you get that recessed lighting. We got to do the yard. Got to put in the landscaping. He's got a lot of work to do. It's going to take time. But just be patient, because there is a plan, okay? At least, I hope there is, right? And he's got to trade Brandon Belt. Is there anybody in the Bay Area that's still repping for Brandon Belt? I mean, seriously. 95795, Chilton Autobody text line. You still believing in Brandon Belt? You know how many years I've come into the season going, this is going to be Brandon Belt's year, y'all. And I tried to go like Jedi mind trick, reverse psychology, Mr. Miyagi, wax on, wax off kind of a deal this year. And I was like, nope, this is the year I'm not going to anoint Brandon Belt as it's his time. Because then I thought, well, maybe it would be his time. No. It's just never going to be his time. And by the way, how old's Brandon Belt now, guys? Like 31? I mean, Brandon Belt is who he is at this point. It's not like it's all of a sudden going to click for him. He's just not a great baseball player. All right. 888-957-9570 is the number. We're going to check in with our good buddy John Dickinson. He's up in Portland. We'll talk a little hoop with JD, and then we got some post-game sound to get to. So we got plenty to go on a Sunday morning. It is Ryan Covey with you, just bobbing and weaving. 95.7, The Game.
Looney backs up, fade away from 15, too strong. Lillard's got the rebound.
I'm surprised he didn't follow his shot.
Now Lillard's pass is picked out of the air by Draymond Green. Hand off Steph Curry, fakes and fires. Three ball, good from the left side.
Now back to 95.7, The Game.
Golden State Warriors handling business at the Moda Center last night. Of course, you heard it right here on 95.7 The Game. Tim Roy and Jim Barnett on the call, 110-99. The final score, Draymond Green had that triple-double sewn up by the end of the third quarter when the Warriors outscored the Trailblazers 29-13, taking their soul and putting a stranglehold on this series in the process. Live and local, our very own John Dickinson, JD, with boots on the ground, and now rolling in with me on a Sunday morning. JD, what's cracking, my brother? How are you?
What's going on, Covey? Good to be with you, man.
You too.
Unbelievable game last night.
Yeah, man. Let's start with Draymond. I mean, what I loved is the way, and we'll get into his defense in a moment, but his imprint on the offensive side of things. There were so many times last night with the ball in his hand, he's pushing the play. And then I know some other times he's slowing down a little bit and, you know, just knowing the right button to push. And it was so funny. I went I watched the game on my phone a little bit. I had to go to this charity event last night, so I ended up hanging out with my sister a little bit last night, and I watched a game with her at her house, and she was sitting there kind of working on her computer, and she just was like, man, they're saying Draymond's name a lot, you know? And it was like, you know, she just kind of passively listening, and I was like, yeah, because he's having a hell of a game. And it's just kind of funny that even for a, you know, a casual observer, like, boy, they're talking about Draymond a lot. And it's like, yeah, because he's all over the place, JD.
Yeah, he was everywhere, and he's played like a man possessed, really, for the most part in this postseason as a whole, but he's just ramped it up to another level since Kevin Durant went out in Game 5 against the Rockets. I mean, he is willing this team to win on both ends of the floor. Defense outstanding, but yeah, I thought the key to last night's game in particular was just the relentless pressure that he put on the Portland defense, whether it was off a made basket or a miss, he'd get the rebound and bring it up, or sometimes somebody else would get the rebound and look for him. I mean, he really did, and there are times, and look, and Magic Johnson's an incredible player, and there are times, though, when Draymond Green does look a little bit like Magic Johnson, bringing the ball up the court because of his height, because of his body type, because of his incredible intelligence and just command of the game. And I thought last night, yes, Stephen Curry wound up having an incredible ball game. And, you know, yes, the Warriors defense put the clamps down on the Blazers in the third quarter. But I thought the tempo and the control of the game that Draymond Green had. And then, oh, by the way, you look at his line and it winds up being 20, 13, and 12. I think you could make a case that's one of the best games that Draymond Green has ever played.
Yeah, I think without question. And, you know, Wes and I, Gabe and I before the show were just going over some of his all-time great postseason games. And you know, you think about Game 7 against the Cavs. And, you know, he's had so many down the years, but I just feel like last night it was just vintage, and it was, you know, he's already been all world this postseason, but he just took it to an even another level. And you know, I also feel like too, JD, while Draymond is clearly one of those guys that, you know, can play with fire and kind of plays on the edge, we can see him getting very demonstrative with officials. This series in particular, especially coming off one as emotional as the Houston series, this Portland series, and Draymond even talked about it, you know, yeah, they've played in the playoffs the last few years, you know, a couple times, but there's not a lot of animosity between these two teams. And, you know, it's like almost like the perfect matchup for the Warriors right now, because they still got a hill to climb in the NBA Finals. But it seems like, you know, they follow Draymond, and, you know, and he kind of sets the tone. And this series, the tone has been, this is just strictly business. It's not personal. The Portland Trailblazers are just in our way right now, and it's been almost like clinical, surgical, especially in the second half of these games.
Yeah, it really has, and I think part of it in this series is the fact that the Warriors have worn the Blazers down, and the Blazers are tired, and I know the report came out about Damian Lillard and his ribs. I mean, clearly Damian Lillard isn't right in this series. I mean, just if you're watching it, if you're in the building, if you're watching it on TV, you can tell that Damian Lillard isn't right. And look, that's not to say that the score of the series would be any different. I'm not going down that road, but I do think you have to open, you know, every team has their own scenario. And you know, the Warriors obviously are going for the three-peat and trying to win for the fourth time in 5 years for that group with Curry and Clay and Draymond and Iguodala, Livingston. But, you know, Portland also has their story coming into this thing, and their story is fought like hell to get through seven in Denver and you know, had a tough five-game first-round series against Oklahoma City that they wound up winning in dramatic fashion with Lillard hitting the big three over Paul George. So I think for this series, it winds up being a good matchup for the Warriors, just in that Portland hasn't been here before, and Portland, I think, is just on fumes. And I think you could tell in the second half when the game got tight and the Warriors made their run, the Blazers just couldn't finish. I mean, you've got C.J. McCollum missing five free throws. You've got Lillard and McCollum missing layups. I mean, Lillard's passing in this series has just been awful. You know, so I think, and the Warriors' defense deserves a lot of credit. Again, I'm not taking anything away from the Warriors with any of these things that I'm saying, but to your point about it being the right matchup, I think you're right. And there is an appropriate respect in play that the Warriors have for the Blazers. That, you know, but it's a healthy respect where I think they also know that they're in a different time and a different place as far as, you know, they're winning championships while the Blazers are still trying to figure out how to get over the hump and really look comfortable in their own skin, I think, on a conference finals level.
Yeah, and you're right, JD. And, you know, I think the Portland's playing with house's money. I don't think anybody expected them to be in the Western Conference finals. I mean, they were first-round sweep last year. I even think the year before they got swept out in the first round, if I'm not mistaken. So
By the Warriors.
Yeah, oh, yeah, there you go. So, see, there you go. So that did happen. So there you go. But they lose Nurkic, and you give them all the credit in the world for, you know, rallying and getting where they've gotten. You think the series would have been any different with Nurkic out there?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think probably. I mean, but look, there. I think the bigs for Portland played well last night, but the one thing that proved true in the first couple of games is, you know, who's the third best player for Portland? I mean, and McCollum and Lillard haven't exactly played well, but who's the third best player? Who's the guy that you can throw it to that's going to make a play?
Yeah.
Clearly, if Nurkic is around, it's Nurkic. I mean, the Warriors, I think that's a big difference in the series. Draymond Green is a playmaker. We're talking about Draymond Green being the best player on the floor last night, right? Well, Portland has Lillard and McCollum, and if you trap those guys, which the Warriors have done with regularity in this series, who are you throwing the ball to? You throwing the ball to Aminu? You throwing the ball to Evan Turner? You throwing? I mean, it's
Myers
just,
Leonard,
it's night
yeah.
and day.
Right.
It's night and day. The options. Yeah, Myers Leonard had a decent first half last night, and you know, but the Blazers just don't have the forwards and the bigs without Nurkic to where they just have that third guy to go to. I mean, you imagine them dumping it down to Nurkic without DeMarcus Cousins in the fold? I mean, that would be big-time problematic for the Warriors. There's always a fine line in these series. And look, the Warriors very well could go sweep this thing tomorrow, and the narrative at that point will be, well, the Warriors dominated this series, and they won it 4-0. And the reality is the Warriors play here, play there. They could actually be down 2-1 in this series right now. But, again, that's a credit to where the Warriors are in their process. It's a credit to their tenacity. It's not to take anything away from them. But even in a 3-0 series, I think a lot of the times you can look at it, and if you look at it objectively and respectfully, you could see where easily one or two plays maybe flip it, and the Warriors are up against it a little bit, maybe
right.
down 2-1, trying to fight like hell to get back into this series without Kevin Durant.
No, you're right, and it speaks to their depth and their experience, and, you know, it's the little differences in playoff basketball. I mean, you know, we've kind of had a distorted perception of what basketball reality is the last couple of years. You know, Warriors going 16-1 the first year with KD winning an NBA title. It's not supposed to be that easy, and, you know, these games should be tight. It's the Western Conference Finals, for God's sake, and the Warriors are without Kevin Durant and DeMarcus Cousins, so, you know, you would expect the Trailblazers to give them a bit of a push, but, you know, when it's time to go get money in the fourth quarter, it's been their experience, their confidence, and, you know, I was talking to Dieter Kurtenbach about this. It's almost like, you know, there's a difference between a team believing that they can win and a team knowing that they're going to win, and I just feel like in crunch time, and it's, you know, it's Draymond leading the way, Curry, Clay, Iguodala, these guys, they know they're going to win, and you know what? Portland knows it too.
Yeah, I think you have seen that the last two games. Like, the game has gotten to a certain point where the Warriors are back in it and they're making their run, and there's almost an oh bleep like factor to the Blazers, and you could feel it in the building, and you could feel it in Houston. I mean, going back to Game 6 when the Warriors got that game to a point where, you know, you thought, boy, this is going to be tough, but the Warriors kept hanging around, and all of a sudden it's tied, and I'll never forget, it's tied with, 7.5 minutes to go in Game 6 in Houston, and Mike D'Antoni called a timeout, and you could hear a pin drop inside the arena with 7 minutes to go in a tie game. It wasn't like the Warriors were up 10, and it was like, uh-oh, we're going home. If you're thinking about it from that, you know, that fan base's perspective, it was a tie game. Any team could have won it down the stretch, but there was just this eerie quiet in the building, like everybody knew what was going to happen next. And I think there was a little bit of that last night. I mean, Portland was great, unbelievable crowd. Their fans were into it. First conference finals game for them in 19 years, and they showed out. It's a great atmosphere. It's one of the best atmospheres, I think, in the NBA.
Yeah.
But I think there was a little, you know, throughout the game, there were moments where if you're a Blazers fan, you're thinking, we should be up more. And they weren't. And the Warriors, you know, every time that the Blazers could have really blown the doors off the game, the Warriors would have a little bit of a mini run to just kind of hang in. And, yeah, once the Warriors got it, you know, within two and got the lead, it just felt like, uh-oh, they're the better team in the building. That was the vibe. And I don't know that the Blazers have any kind of answer.
Yeah, and I know the Warriors take a sick satisfaction in that when you hear them on 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco Radio.com Sports Station. They love it, JD, when I weave the ID into the narrative, so I like to do that. John Dickinson joining us from Portland for a few minutes, of course, our very own JD. You said something great on the post-game show the other night when I was listening, JD, and I wanted to hit on it. You know, when Portland gave them a run in Game 2, and you said, you know, to beat a team like the Warriors, sometimes you got to beat them like three times over. And, you know, they had the big lead. What was it, 17 in Game 2? Warriors come back.
Yep.
Then they're up 108 to 100 or whatever it was. They're up 8 late, and then the Warriors come back. And it was like, nope, you might have knocked the champ down a couple of times, but you didn't get that TKO. You didn't finish them off. And, you know, I think even though they came out desperate in Game 3, JD, I think there was still a bit of a hangover from Game 2. Because let's face it, if Portland was going to have any prayer in this series, they had to get a split at Oracle, because otherwise you got to beat them 4 out of 5 times, and we know that ain't happening, Captain.
No, yeah, there's levels to it, and yeah, if the Blazers were really going to be a threat to win the series, they were going to have to probably win one of those first two. I agree with you. Extend the series, you know, it's probably the same thing. You know, anytime you look at a playoff series, is it going to be a short series? Is it going to be a long series, right? And the difference between a short series and a long series is basically one game. It's basically a 5-game series is a short series. A 4-game series, a 6-game series, though, is a long series, right?
I got
so
you.
It's 6
yeah,
or 7 long, 5 or 4 short. But when you look at it, I mean, if Portland wins Game 2, we're almost certainly looking at this as a long series at that point, because you're thinking Portland's going to win one at home, and then there you go. It's 2-2 after 4,
right,
and then you're coming back up here next weekend. So, no, I thought that the win in Game 2 on Thursday flipped this series back onto a schedule for the Warriors where it was all lined up for them to win in 5. And,
right,
and just the way that – like, I left Game 2 thinking the Blazers just don't have enough. This Blazers team just doesn't have enough. Damian Lillard doesn't look right. The Warriors have, you know, what the phrase that the Giants coined back in their era, the Warriors have champions blood.
Right.
They do. And the champions blood without Kevin Durant, going back to that frantic fourth quarter in Game 5 against the Rockets, it's been on full display. And I think it's been led by the guy that we started this segment talking about, and that's Draymond Green.
Yeah, just vintage Draymond last night. And, you know, if he ever achieves the loftiest heights of a basketball player and makes it to the Hall of Fame, just roll tape from that game and just be like, you want to see Draymond at his very best at both ends of the floor. There it is. Hey, I went back and dug up this stat, JD. I went back and looked at the games and did a little math even, which isn't always necessarily my strong suit. But when you think about Kevin Durant being out, you figure, okay, well, the Splash Brothers are going to have to do a lot of the scoring, right? And you know, you're going to get contributions from up and down the lineup, and everybody else is going to have to help out. You're going to kind of have to spread out the burden of the loss of Kevin Durant, and a lot of different guys are going to have to own that, because there is not one person that can, you know, fill that void. How about this? Guys not named Clay or Steph, non-Splash Brothers. Game 6, those players combined for 58 points against Houston, Game 6. Game 1 of this series, they combined for 54. Game 2, they combined for 53. Game 3, they combined for 53. It's like, it's uncanny how the rest of the guys are doing just enough. And then, of course, Steph's scoring like 35 a night right now. And then Clay's chipping in what he chips in and playing his two-way game. But it's just, it's crazy to me just how close these numbers are for guys not named Steph and Clay to pick up the slack offensively.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm just looking at it right now, and I was doing some quick math as you were talking there, and it's, I mean, Kevon Looney, 4 for 5. I mean, like, it's the efficiency by which you're doing it, right?
Because right, yeah,
if, you know, the opposition wants those guys shooting the basketball, but they've shot the basketball in really good positions to succeed. You know, Quinn Cook, you know, getting open looks. Kevon Looney, it's usually a layup or a dunk or a little short jumper if Kevon Looney's getting it. Alphonso McKinney hit maybe one of the biggest shots of the game last night.
Yep.
His quarter three. But I'm looking at it. Looney 4 for 5. McKinney 2 for 2. Livingston 2 for 3. You know, Jordan Bell 3 for 5, and it should have been 4 for 5.
He missed it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.